I don't know how many times when we're talking about other states, the state of California comes up and we go, wow, they're off the rails about this policy. That's tongue-in-cheek, pun intended there. They've got a new mandate for all freight trains in the state of California to be zero-emission trains by 2035. Is that even doable? You know, given the currently all the freight engines in the country are diesel right now, the CA mandate poses really an all but insurmountable challenge to carriers that operate there, like BNSF. Lena Kent, who's the General Director for Public Affairs for BNSF Railway, joining us here early on to talk about how the industry is trying to manage with this and hopefully fighting back against an EV mandate that is going to wreak havoc with our supply lines. It's bound to. Also on the agenda a bit later on, too, a discussion with Will Huffman of the American Petroleum Institute. And they're among the leaders pushing back on a new tailpipe emission standard from the Biden administration that some believe is aimed at banning gas vehicles altogether. Yes, energy the focus once again today here on Voices of Montana.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio from Montana for Montana. Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. And now, here's your host, Tom Schultz.
Thanks, Cody. I hope you guys are doing good. We're getting to it, getting the work done today. And right into it, as I mentioned a bit later on, as we focus on energy here today, some new tailpipe emission standards from the EPA that, the policy doesn't really match up with what's reality out there, and there's some pushback regarding that. Some believe it's actually aimed at banning gas vehicles altogether. That'll be later on. Let's launch right into it early on here. I think we know how BNSF Railway is so important to Montana. Routes all over the High Line, the Eastern, Southern, Western, and then, you know, we're talking also 32,500 miles of network rails across the country as well. Really big operation. They're being challenged in California with a new law that is really trying to it's going to do away with diesel freight trains. They think, but can't, you know, the questions, there's a lot of questions about it. Number one is, does even the technology exist to move freight, that much freight, efficiently and economically by rail? Lena Kent is joining us here today, and I'm very pleased, General Director of Public Affairs for BNSF Railway. And right there in that, in California right now, Lena, where this battle is going on. Thanks for being here. I appreciate your time. Going to ask how you are, but I know you're probably right in the middle of it, eh?
Right, I am right in the middle of it, Tom, but thank you so much for having me on, and good morning to all of your listeners.
Tell me how this started. I mentioned there's a new directive from California, and of course, they're going to need the EPA's permission on this, but just launch into it. What is this directive? Is it even doable? How are you guys, you know, what's the impact, and what are some of the options you're looking at?
Sure. So last year, the California Air Resources Board, known as CARB, voted and passed a new regulation that basically would require the railroads to change out their locomotive fleet. It requires us to, starting in 2030, any locomotive that is over 23 years old or older is not allowed to operate in the state. And that's even locomotives that have been completely rehabbed. It has a brand new engine in it. Those locomotives would not be allowed to operate in California. By 2035, locomotives must be, we can only acquire zero emission locomotives. And then another aspect of this rule, it does require, starting in 2026, the railroads must put into a fund. For us, it would be up to $800 million per year, and that would go into a fund. And when zero emission locomotives are available to be purchased, then the state would go out and help purchase those. But that certainly is a significant amount of funds that would need to go into this account. And to really to put that into perspective, when you look at our overall capital plan, that represents about 20 to 25% of that. So that's money that goes into an account that we can't use to implement other additional infrastructure across our network. It certainly takes away a big portion of it. Solely going to California.
That in itself sounds illegal.
Exactly. And it not only that, it also would be detrimental to a lot of the short line railroads that operate here in the state, because they just don't, the revenue that they're generating, they would not be able to comply with that portion of the regulation, in addition to the requirement to, you know, not have any of their locomotives be able to operate in the state, and the push for zero emission technology that's not currently available to us.
What's the impact?
So it's a significant impact. It's not only an impact, I think, to California, but it's certainly an impact across our entire supply chain and for those who are in Montana. You know, we transport a lot of goods coming out of Montana, wheat, beans, peas, lentils, a lot of renewables. So this certainly has an impact on both the ag industry as well as the energy industry. And in terms of, you know, their ability or our ability to move those goods that are grown or produced in other states into California, because we wouldn't be able to operate a large percentage of our locomotives into the state, it begs the question, how, you know, do you stop at the border? How do you move those goods into California when the locomotives we currently have would not be able to come into the state?
Well, and that's a big question, too, is you know, what options are you exploring? Once again, it's Lena Kent, General Director of Public Affairs of BNSF Railway, BNSF.com, for more information. I just want to note here, and thank you personally for it, BNSF transports enough sugar in a year to bake more than 130 billion cookies. You know, you're not doing me any favors there, but thank you. So all of that freight, what is a viable option if, let's go back. Can it be done through electric trains? Do electric trains, battery powered trains, and let's not forget that when these batteries recharge, they're using the same kind of electricity that powers other vehicles. It's fossil fuel electricity, a vast majority of. But is that even doable?
So right now it's not doable. We, you know, BNSF, you know, we have really invested in new technologies. In fact, we tested the first battery electric locomotive here in California, but unfortunately just didn't have enough battery power to get us very far. And so we have ordered the next generation of electric locomotives to test. But the manufacturers have indicated that those will not be available until at least 2027, and that's only one or two locomotives when, you know, we have several thousand locomotives across our network. And then, you know, we're also testing a hydrogen fuel cell locomotive, but we won't begin testing that until 2026 to 2027. So we have invested in technology. Sustainability is really important for our company. In fact, you know, I think many would agree that it is the most environmentally friendly way to move goods over land is by rail. You know, we can move a ton of freight over 500 miles on a single gallon of diesel fuel. And so it's already very fuel efficient and environmentally friendly. Mm-hmm. But certainly, you know, the state would like to see us go to zero emission. And that technology is just not available yet today.
Well, and there's even some uncertainty about if it will materialize ever in that regard. Just because of all the pressures on those critical minerals. So how far can how much freight, you know, give us a picture. We see BNSF trains, and there's 3-4 engines up front, one in the middle, sometimes they're on the end, and they're a mile long. How far can electric diesel or electric trains at this point, battery-powered, transport?
Well, right now we don't really have a viable option. We haven't been able to adequately test other than the one locomotive that we had, and the battery wasn't sufficient to go very far at all. Maybe 70 miles at the most, and that was on flat land. We weren't able to test it on grades and so forth. So there is still a lot of work to be done in that area. In addition to the technology of the actual battery electric locomotive, you also need to have adequate infrastructure across your network to charge that locomotive. And that's not currently available either, nor is there enough energy to meet the demands of going all zero emission for locomotives, for vehicles, for trucks. All of the requirements and regulations that have been put in place, there's just not enough energy to support that. So certainly a lot of problems and a lot of details still to be worked out before this is ready to be commercially viable across our network.
And that seems pretty black and white when people look at this from a factual standpoint. What kind of pushback? And again, it's California, and they go off the rails a lot with legislation. You know, how do we interject some wisdom in this energy transition?
Well, and I would say that it's really important. You know, I'm talking to listeners here in Montana, and why is it so important for them to jump in and engage on this issue? Because it will have impacts not only in California, but across our entire network, including Montana. So it's really important for people to let their voices be heard. Currently, the Environmental Protection Agency is looking at giving California a waiver to implement this regulation, because currently California does not have authority over interstate locomotives. And so EPA is looking at giving them a waiver to regulate those locomotives. And so it's really important for your listeners to weigh in, and several already have. Several in the ag community, energy industry have already weighed in on how important it is to push back on this regulation. It'd be really important for them to contact the Environmental Protection Agency and let them know that they oppose implementing and giving a waiver to California to implement this regulation.
Is there any move in Congress for some kind of resolution? I know that there are CRAs, I believe it's a different acronym for it, but they have some teeth when it comes to trying redirecting some of our government agencies. Is there any legislative effort toward this?
So there, you know, we've obviously made contact with a number of our legislators to have conversations with them about this issue and the widespread impact it's going to have. I would say at this point, you know, there is not anybody in Congress that's currently taking up the issue. That's why it's so vitally important to let your elected officials know and EPA know how problematic this is going to be for not only for Montana, but, you know, the nation as a whole.
So it's important for folks to weigh in there. Supply chain around the West. If they receive this waiver and a lot of carriers unable to comply, I mean, as you look at all of these, I imagine, Lena, it's pretty hard to even plan on operating in California with all this uncertainty. But looking at some of those viable options, go ahead.
It absolutely is. You know, it's very hard for a corporation to plan and to operate with so much uncertainty. You know, we do believe that given all the unknowns and the requirements, you know, there could be a modal shift. You may see more move over the highway further congesting some of our nation's highways. And in some locations, like in California, they can't sustain additional, you know, movements over the highway. We just don't have the infrastructure in place. So that's certainly going to be problematic. And then also from a consumer standpoint, you're going to see prices increase in order to try to meet this mandate. Yeah. And you know, I'm sure most could agree that we can't sustain additional expense, many of the consumers out there.
Yeah. And again, you know, doing the math, and we've not been doing it well, diesel and freight trains are a very efficient way and also environmentally friendly way at this point. Mm-hmm. I wanted to Lena Kent is with us again, General Director, Public Affairs, BNSF Railway. And I know you've got to run. I appreciate your time. I wanted a couple of questions here. One is, as I was looking at this, I noted that you have got like an intermodal proposal in California, I believe it is, that has been stuck in red tape since 2005. Another example of how difficult it can be for industry to operate. Catch us up to date on that real quick, or the difficulties there.
We did propose to build a new intermodal facility near the ports of LA and Long Beach that would allow us to move cargo closer to the ports, eliminating several moves on the nation's highways. Unfortunately, that project has been sued, as the environmental community has demanded, zero emission type technology. We have proposed, though, a new facility that's about 130 miles away from the ports. It's called the Barstow International Gateway, where we would load cargo out in the desert, transloaded in warehouses there for distributions across our network. But unfortunately, this mandate makes it impossible for us to even build that new facility. And that facility is situated on 4,600 acres. It's definitely transformative. It's one of the biggest initiatives in our company's history, and certainly an important project for the nation's supply chain as a whole. But that project is also in jeopardy because of this regulation.
I think you guys are operating in 28 states, 37,000 employees. Is there anything like this elsewhere?
Are you talking about the regulation or the project?
Well, the regulation. I'm going back. Sorry, thank you for that update. Yeah, I'm going back to the regulation.
No, there is no other regulation that I'm aware of. This certainly is something that will have widespread implications, not only on our company, but all railroads across the nation. Because, you know, you have other railroads that operate into the state of California. We may use their locomotives if we're taking a train from, let's say, originated in New York, just coming to California. We may have a locomotive that's on another railroad that stays with that train. That locomotive would not be able to come into the state of California. So this impacts about 25,000 locomotives across the entire country that would not be able to come into the state of California.
Wow. I appreciate the update here, and I know a lot of people, I'll speak for myself. I mean, Burlington Northern, Great Northern, BNSF, they put aspirin in my first aid kit and food on my table for years growing up. And it's a well-functioning industry at this point. And this move seems rather nonsensical in a lot of ways. So I appreciate the pushback. So folks can, encourage to weigh in with the Environmental Protection Agency.
Absolutely. Let your voice be heard. This is not just a California issue. It is important that everybody across our nation, including those in Montana, let the EPA know and their elected officials know about how damaging this regulation that came out of California is going to be for the nation's supply chain.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I would ask a simple question about how much does a diesel train or engine cost versus a battery power, but I don't think that you've got a good answer to that yet because – go ahead.
You're absolutely right. I can't give you a good answer on that because the technology does not yet exist. There has been prototypes that have been tested, but they are nowhere near ready for prime time, nor are they commercially viable to replace the 25,000 locomotives that are currently operating throughout the country. Even if they were, there just is not adequate infrastructure to charge those locomotives.
Yeah, those are facts facing this policy, and it's they're gonna bump into each other. Lena, thank you so much for that, and I look forward to chatting with you down the road. Okay.
Right. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Lena Kent, General Director, again, Public Affairs for BNSF Railway, and she's been around that BNSF for a number of years too. And again, this is unlike anything I think that the country has faced before. Some of these mandates are not really adding up. We'll switch gears and kind of talk about how they're not adding up in the auto industry with Will Huffman next on Voices.
When Torgerson's recently acquired five of the former Titan Machinery dealerships, it was kind of a game changer. Now this region's legacy Case IH Ag Equipment Company has added Case Construction Equipment to their Torgerson lineup. With Case skid steers, N-Series backhoe loaders, and compact track loaders. Or how about the powerful Case G-Series wheel loaders for the most demanding construction, farms, or feedlot, Case Construction Equipment. Now at Torgerson's or go to Torgerson.biz.
Hey, Colder, have you tried that place in Bozeman, the Sapphire Motel? There this week. Friendly front staff, parking right in front of my room, modern amenities, and budget-friendly with that ag rate.
Ag rate?
Yeah, the ag rate at the Sapphire Motel, a discounted rate for ag folks attending conferences, 4-H, or other events in Bozeman, close to I-90, downtown, and Montana State.
Go Cats, and a go on that ag rate.
The Sapphire Motel, down-home comfort and a classic motor inn, 310 North 7th in Bozeman.
We've all been there. The sinking feeling when autocorrect sabotages your message just as you hit send.
No.
Or when you hear those dreaded words.
For customer service, press or say one.
With Pacific Source Health Plans, you don't have to worry about technology failing you. That's because we serve members with humans. not automated phone trees.
Visit PacificSourceMembersFirst.com to learn more.
I'm Jenny Stovall, born and raised in eastern Montana. I'm a fourth generational Montanan rancher. As a community, we need to realize that we are all a human. We're not superhuman, and that it's okay to be sad some days or need help or ask for help. And that's why we're here, is to help each other. We're secluded and we're isolated. And in order to keep our sanity, we need to help each other out. So if you know anyone that needs help, please send them to beyondtheweather.com for free counseling for farmers and ranchers.
The Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation released the 2024 Montana Water Supply Outlook Report Monday. It shows much of the state is facing abnormally dry to severe drought conditions following an unusually warm and dry winter. According to a new legislative report released Monday, it's unclear if inmates with the Montana Department of Corrections are receiving much education or instruction. Some programs offered seem to do little for inmates who face reentry into a market hungry for employees, and those same inmates gain little in terms of practical skills. About 12.5 million people visited Montana in 2022 and 2023, but last year they spent about $5.45 billion, down slightly from 2022. According to the Institute for Tourism and Research at the University of Montana, that money reduces the average tax burden on households by about $930 a year. With Montana News headlines on the Northern News Network, I'm Brian Bennett.
Before you make your plans for branding this year, make sure you at least have all the tools. This is Shane, and at Western Ranch Supply, we are the branding headquarters. With 3- and 4-inch stainless steel branding irons in stock, and all standard letters and numbers to custom-designed irons. We have branding stoves in different sizes and special order electric irons that'll heat in 90 seconds, maintaining a constant and even temperature, plus irons for freeze branding. Western Ranch Supply, serving the big country.
Help DEA keep our community safe and healthy by participating in National Prescription Drug Take Back Day, Saturday, April 27th. Take action right in your own home by cleaning out your medicine cabinet of unneeded medications. Keep them safe, clean them out, take them back. Find a collection site near you at DEATakeBack.com. Do your part to lower overdose deaths and prevent prescription drug misuse before it starts. That's DEATakeBack.com.
Yeah, that's going to be difficult to wade through. Maya, thanks again to Lena Kent for joining us. And welcome back here, Tom Schultz, alongside 866-627-5483. That's our number if you're going to weigh in, want to comment here or a question as we look at energy policy now from a different standpoint, 866-627-5483 or 781-627-543 on the text line. There is another issue out there, and this was away from California, but not too far to the other far side of the country and to Washington, D.C. Will Huffman's joining us now, Vice President of Downstream Policy with the American Petroleum Institute. They're one of the industry leaders that are pushing back against new tailpipe emission standards from the Biden administration that some say could be aimed at really banning gas vehicles altogether. How do we get from there, new tailpipe emissions to banning gas vehicles? Let's talk about that with Will Huffman. Good morning, Will. How are you doing?
Good morning, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. Let's look at this policy. What are the rules for it right now? How did it come about? And then we'll talk about that impact.
Absolutely. Tom, what we're really talking about are new rules from the Biden administration that would essentially mandate 2 out of every 3 new cars have to be electric vehicles by 2032. So this rule, while not an explicit ban on internal combustion engines, is really a de facto ban. The rules use a complicated grams per CO2 metric, but at the end of the day, the result is, in order to meet these rules, new cars that are going to be available in 8 short years, 2 out of every 3 of those are going to have to be EVs, and that will apply nationwide.
And this is an industry standard. So talk about how that works, because there's some flexibility in there for manufacturers, not a lot because there are being mandated, but when the EPA sets overall emission standards, that's not like per tailpipe, is it? It's per vehicle, or how does that work?
Yeah, great question, Tom. It's a fleet average. So if you're manufacturing vehicles, you essentially take the emissions average of all of your vehicles. But the way the EPA has set this standard and this rule, which just went final And there's a whole slew of litigation that's going to have to pan out on it. But the rule just went final. And essentially, to meet these fleet averages, vehicle manufacturers are going to have to sell or offer for sale. 2 out of every 3 vehicles are going to have to be electric vehicles in order for these manufacturers to be in compliance. And if they're not in compliance, they're looking at millions of dollars in fines. And so the bottom line is this is really going to feel and function like a ban of traditional gasoline-powered vehicles, of diesel-powered vehicles, of traditional hybrid vehicles for most Americans out there. It's going to make internal combustion engines prohibitively expensive or outright prohibited in some places. And I think, you know, in terms of the impact, new polling really bears out how Americans are feeling about this. There's some new polling from a firm called Ipsos that shows that 3 out of every 4 Americans oppose regulations to ban gasoline, diesel, and hybrid vehicles. And essentially, that's what this rule, in effect, is going to do, again, by 2032 in just 8 short years.
You know, and I hear things like that, and I always jump right to the end point there is, you know, what's going on? Why can't these people do the math themselves and understand what they're doing there? And maybe they fully do. And that's what I think a lot of people are concerned about is the direction of this administration when it comes to energy policy overall. You can address that now, but there's more implications, I think, to talk about here, too, among them being consumers' choice. Like you said, there's no infrastructure for EVs. We can't really afford them at this point, and they're going to remain on the lot because we don't have money to drive them off there.
Absolutely. You raised a lot of issues that are on the fronts of minds of a lot of folks out there. You know, EVs are really a new technology. They have their own advantages and disadvantages. But at the end of the day, we think that Americans should be able to choose a vehicle that best meets their needs and budget. As you know, we have a big, diverse country. There are lots of folks who live in rural areas. There are folks who live in urban areas who may live in condo buildings or apartment buildings where they don't have garage charging. There are folks who drive long distances. There are folks who live in colder climates. There are folks who haul heavy things up hillsides and mountains. And an EV may not be the best vehicle to meet their needs. And so what this rule is really about is forcing the vast majority of cars for sale to be electric vehicles when, you know, we think EVs have a lot of promise. They're a good solution for a certain subset of people, but they're certainly not an overall solution for everyone in America. And our real concern is that's what this rule is doing, is pushing everyone into a technology that doesn't fit the needs of many, many Americans. So you mentioned, Tom, in terms of the infrastructure required. There are right now, I read where there are about 120 public access chargers in Montana. So 120 in a state as big as Montana certainly doesn't seem like enough to go around in terms of what's going to be required. And then if you look at recent vehicle sales in Montana, last year there were about 1 million vehicles sold. This probably won't surprise you, but more than 999,000 of those were internal combustion engine vehicles. 3,000 were electric vehicles. So we're talking about 3,000 out of 1 million. That's well shy of 1%, which is just to say that the reality today, what Montanans are buying, what they're driving, what they require, what they want, what they need, doesn't all match what's going to be available to them in 8 short years. And so
more to come, Will. I'm going to hold you off right there, and we've got more on the other side of the break. Will Huffman of American Petroleum Institute here on Voices.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
Mm-hmm.